listening to Prison Pipeline on 90.7 FM, KBOO, Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Peter Pincel, and we will be speaking with Dan Herman, Executive Director of 211. Dan, why don't you take a second to introduce yourself for the audience?
Thanks, Peter, and thanks for having me in. I've come to 211 Info as the new CEO about 5 months ago. And prior to that, I was doing a lot of consulting work with nonprofits in the Portland area in Southwest Washington. Actually reside over in Vancouver. And prior to that, interestingly enough, I think, spent a lot of time in the private sector. So my point of view and the way I look at nonprofit work is it's incredibly valuable to the community, to society at large, but tend to take a little bit more of a business frame on things and try to bring the better sides, and I do mean the better sides of private sector business practices over to nonprofit, and just in terms of just maximizing their impact and their performance as an organization, and at the same time having just a tremendous culture, a work culture, which is something I think we do have at 211 Info.
Okay, so you say you came from private sector, but more recently you came from consulting work. What led you to 211 Info?
211 Info has an impact that's across the state of Oregon now, and it is very much information referral. Our mission, as I see it, is to make social services work better for everybody.
So maybe this is a good time to introduce 211 Info a little bit more fully.
Absolutely. So 211 Info is part of a national network, although we're independently owned and operated in that sense. But we cover the entire state of Oregon. We rolled across the state of Oregon February of this year, and then Southwest Washington, Clark and Skamania counties in Southwest Washington. But we do information referral, and we're providing resources to over 400,000 people that are contacting us per year. It's a free service, and these are consumers or clients throughout the region I just mentioned, and they're looking for a range of social services, health and human services, to make their lives work better, to get the assistance they need. We're doing that with about 25 people that answer telephones in a community information center, as we call it. We're also taking text and carrying on conversations, anonymous conversations via text. We have email and we have web. So in total, in the past year, we had over, as I say, 400,000 contacts. And I think we're making a difference, and there's a lot of room for growth.
If someone wants to access 211 services, it just looks like picking up the phone and calling 211?
Very memorable number, three digits only, simply from your dial pad. 211 is the telephone piece. If you want to take it offline, so to speak, or away from the phone, you can go 898. 211 is a text, and your text will be responded to, and you'll start a text conversation, which works good in certain environments where people want anonymity or what have you. And then, as I mentioned, you've got the email, and of course the web is 211info.org, and you can go in and end your own search inquiry or query and get the resources you need across just a range of health and human services. Most of our work, as it turns out, the preponderance of our calls and contacts are around really kind of food, shelter, housing, food assistance, help with rent assistance or deposit on rent payments, and then also just general, at this time of year, certainly winter shelter, and then utility assistance. But there's a whole range from healthcare to I don't have insurance, I need a dental visit. We've had calls recently where we had some tours in with some of the political people that were lobbying for additional money from the state of Oregon, where we had some calls, and one gentleman was looking for wood for the winter months. One person was looking for bicycle repair, and you know, in the case of the wood, it related to keeping the home warm for the winter months. In the case of the bicycle repair, it related to transportation. So real fundamental needs across just a wide range of things.
So when people give you a call and they're looking for resources, does it look like you refer them to the 211 dentist, or you give them money for the wood, or what does that look like?
Absolutely, community resources. We don't venture into the private private market or the for-profit in terms of resources and referral. So these would be people that would offer free or reduced dental care. There's a number of partner agencies, Impact Northwest, Central City, Southeast Works. I mean, the range goes on and on depending upon the need area. We're doing some work currently with Cover Oregon to increase the referrals for the Affordable Care Act and healthcare transformation. So, but they're always partner agencies and their social services agencies that are offering free or close to free services for consumers across Oregon and Southwest Washington.
Are you always able to find resources for people when they want them?
We always is a tough one. It's a high percentage of cases, and we have a department in addition to the CIC. I mentioned we have a resource group that is constantly updating, acquiring, and maintaining over 8,000 data records across the state. And so it tends to be a really good probability for a match, but I wouldn't say it's 100%. But yet, when we do callbacks as part of our quality control process, we get an overall satisfaction rating of about 98%. So people see the value, and ultimately they're getting, at least in nearly all cases, the service they need. And we also follow up with folks in terms of when they provide us with their phone number and that original contact to see how the service went for them or to see how what their outcome was. So typically in about 2 weeks' time, if they want us to follow up, we will. And we'll find out, do they need additional resources? We ask the second question. Perhaps the original call was around health, but maybe the fundamental need is more around rent assistance or nutrition. So we'll ask that second question and try to get really to the root cause of their need. And so all of that together, Peter, I'd say that in most cases, we address the need and find a solution, but unfortunately, it's going to be shy of 100%.
And so what is the toughest resource to find for callers?
I think this time of year, it's actually finding the winter shelter need and finding capacity where they can actually move forward and find a solution for themselves. I mean, there's such an undersupply of winter shelter capacity. So that gets challenging. And the work for our people in the CIC, those folks on the phone, a high degree of empathy, but also just a high degree of frustration.
So you mentioned that you serve 400,000 people a year. This show is Prison Pipeline, so we're primarily interested in individuals who have been involved in the justice system. Do you have any numbers on what percentage of that number has been affected by the justice system in some way?
Absolutely. So in our calling base in the past 12 years, and these are people that have only self-identified as being in the incarceration system currently or formerly, but there's been over 300 referrals that we've made as a result of callers to reentry programs and programs specific to formerly incarcerated. And about one half of those 300 referrals are right here in Multnomah County. And those, again, I would state that those people are that are self-identified as being incarcerated or formerly incarcerated. So I imagine the number is higher when you look at just the indirects and the incidentals. In addition, we've given nearly 1,500 referrals to agencies that make up the PPRI initiative. So groups like Southeast Works, Central City Concern, YWCA, and Volunteers of America. And so that's a pretty significant number. And again, that's nearly 1,500 in the past 12 months.
So primarily, it seems like people who've been involved in the justice system are trying to access employment services then.
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I think that's a fundamental need and concern. And, you know, one of our goals is to certainly strengthen and be part of the safety net. And there's an absolute need that if you can't help formerly incarcerated persons reconnect, how are they going to gain entrance into the system? How are they going to gain viability, if you will, within reentering society?
You mentioned that you're helping out those who are formerly incarcerated and currently incarcerated, do people who are actually in prison or jail call you?
We've had some of those calls. I don't know the specific numbers off the top, but yes, they can access and they have accessed. Sometimes we refer them back to their probation officer, keeping in mind that our whole system and our whole mission is around information referral. But yes, we've had both prior to being released and then post-release contacts, yes.
Dan, walk me through what a call looks like. When I give you a ring, you pick up the phone, I express need for a service. Where does it go from there?
Yeah. So before we actually call up the database, and it's about the 8,000 records across the region that we have in our system, we will go through some demographic questions that we can collect. Because coming out the other side, just for policymaking, for needs assessment, for capacity planning and development across social services, we collect some incredible data. So there's about 10 demographic questions that we work through, and then we really drill down on what the caller's need is on that particular call. Most calls last 4 to 5 to 6 minutes, and we are, you know, our CIC specialist, community information center specialist, is working through the database on the screen to actually provide the resources. Oftentimes it could be more than one. And in the course of that conversation, more may uncover other needs around employment, around educational need, around food, around potentially domestic violence or mental health counseling. So there's a host of other things that can develop. And if it's the Oregon Food Bank, we actually get onto their website directly. Otherwise, the site and the database is all proprietary to us. But if they're looking for a place to find a food box, we would jump onto Oregon Food Bank, who's a close partner of ours. And given that those contacts and hours and phone numbers and so forth of where they can connect to their solution. At the end of the call, we ask them for first name only and a phone number so that we can follow up in a couple weeks' time and see how the resources worked out, to see if there's anything else they need. And certainly we're always inviting people back to give us a call back as they need additional things, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Then it is the individual's responsibility to take the information that you've given to them to follow through on that.
That's absolutely true. So there's a lot of writing and scribbling, and as part of the conversation in the telephone call, we can also text out to them if they want the information, the record to be sent via text. We simply push a button off our software system and it's sent to them via text. And then that two-week follow-up, we really determine, you know, if they were able to find success, if they took action, and what the outcome was.
Approximately what percentage would you say actually follow through on the resources that you've given to them, and why do you think it's that level?
33% of our callers have called us previously. And so I've got to believe they took action and found a solution. So right off the top, I'd say about a third of our folks have enough confidence and belief in the resource we're providing. I could wager a guess. I don't know. No data is running through my mind that really tells me what percentage took action with the information we provided. Although I would say that, as I said earlier, the satisfaction we rate when we do our rating we get when we do our callbacks is 98% were satisfied with the experience they had with 211 info. Mm-hmm. So I got to believe there's some correlation there to taking action and being pleased with the resource.
And I know that sometimes it's very difficult to get a hold of people by phone after initial contact with them. How do you guys deal with that problem?
We have a couple of people and a couple of staff in the Community Information Center that do nothing but quality control and audits of those return calls. And frankly, I don't know how many calls it takes to make a connect with some of those individuals. But we endeavor to get one out of about every four callers on a quality basis. And then for every caller that wants a call back, we endeavor to call them back. And over time, the numbers are great enough that we get a good representation, a good sampling.
So, Dan, I know that one of the most difficult populations to serve oftentimes in social services are sex offenders. And there are a variety of reasons why services might be difficult to find for them. What level of sex offenders does 211 find services for?
Well, I imagine we could find a full range and probably have a range of those resources in our database. What we do when a topic is more sensitive or requires greater expertise beyond just information referral, which is at the core of what we do in that 4 to 6 minute phone call, we do a warm transfer. So we would go into the database, find out who is dealing with sex offenders and providing that form of counseling. And we would actually keep the caller on the line and make the call to the services group for sex offenders and make what we call a warm transfer. So that connection, that line is never broken and there's a connection to the resource right on the phone. And then at that point, we exit the call and that's bridged over to, in this case, a sex offender services group or counseling group.
When someone who's been involved in the justice system gives you a call, what sorts of resources are they generally looking for?
If I look at some of the data that we've had over the past 12 months, historically, we've had calls around criminal record expungement, formerly incarcerated people in terms of just general counseling. Formerly incarcerated people looking for employment is relatively high. So we talked about the importance of employment overall. Formerly incarcerated people in halfway houses. And then in general, just people looking for reentry programs, whether it's Mercy Corps Northwest or whether it's some of the programs we talked about, PPRI, leading the initiative that is comprised of the organization Southeast Works, Central City Concern, YWCA, and Volunteers of America. So just the idea of reentry programs in general. And then also a category we call inmate social service programs and formerly incarcerated support groups, family parole related services, and then just generally parole and probation issues. So that those are the line items that we have covered in the past 12 months of our services. Just in terms of, surprisingly, one of the things I see, dental coverage or the ability to access a dentist has, it's a surprising number. I want to say it's number 5 or 6 in terms of our list of areas we serve. So dentistry and the ability to access dental treatment is absolutely undersupplied in terms of those without insurance and those without the ability to cover it out of pocket.
That brings up a good point, in fact. Dentistry is underserved currently. How does someone who would be interested or an organization that would be interested in gaining publicity or offering a helping hand through 211 get involved with your organization?
Absolutely. So they can make a call to me. You can actually get to me by dialing 211 off your telephone, or you can call me in Portland at 416-2712, 416-2712. But they could also go onto the website and just self-enter things around their resource, and then those are screened and those are filtered and verified by our what we call our resource group, a staff of about 10 who are building and maintaining and managing that database of about 8,000 records across the state of Oregon. They can personal contact to me, or they can get onto the website 211info.org and certainly fill out that information, and then we'll follow up in terms of getting it into our database.
I have a good friend who works for 911 dispatch, and I know that she faces some workplace stress. I imagine that individuals who work for 211 can face similar situations. What does it look like to work for 211?
The group that comprises our Community Information Center, again, about 25 folks on the telephone, it can be high stress. These are very empathetic individuals, some of which are Spanish bilingual, but many of which are undergraduate degreed and master's degreed in social work. But you can imagine some of the calls they take are pretty intense around a domestic violence situation or potentially a suicide situation. And so there absolutely is a throw off of stress and angst that happens with our CIC specialists, as I call them. So we make sure to give them time to debrief, give them a quiet area and kind of a respite room. And that's an important piece. But there's an energy and a warmth that it resides in our agency and our organization, and those CIC specialists are an important part of that.
So you mentioned that there's 25 individuals in the CIC pool, and then another 10 maintaining the database, and then several doing quality control and follow-up work. How big of an organization is 211?
Right. We're nearly 50-person organization today. You mentioned the key areas. Of course, there's a leadership and administrative staff that support and lead that. One of the things in terms of future growth is we want to get regional specialists across the state of Oregon, what we're calling community engagement coordinators. We found the importance to really grow the service is to have relationships with partner social services across the state. And the way to do that, beyond the advertising and marketing and social media and digital marketing work we do, is to really have people on the streets who can meet with those organizations and build the relationship, build awareness of us, build trust and credibility in 211 Info. And that's the direction we're moving in.
So what's the biggest obstacle that you currently face?
That's an interesting question. Certainly, I think it's most simply, it's the awareness of 211, and then it's a simplistic, easy to remember, easy to access, three-digit dial. We found in areas that we've operated in that we tend to serve close to 11 or 12% of the population over a year's time, but those tend to be Multnomah County and the immediate counties around Multnomah, and in the Willamette Valley, you move to counties and regions east of the Cascades, and our current utilization from consumers or clients in those regions is down around 1 or 2%. So I really think awareness and trust in the service and building out that partner network are critically important. We did not go statewide until February of this year. So we're really still in our infancy in terms of some of those outlying markets, building out our partner network. And I think one of the biggest challenges, in addition to just generating awareness and being there for people, is also financially, you know, like a number of agencies and organizations in the nonprofit sector, we're financially, it's a stretch. We're under-resourced. We're working through some processes now with the state of Oregon. The state of Oregon did fund us for the first time in the last session in June of this year to the tune of $400,000, but we're working towards a February session, the balance of the ask to make that an additional $1.1 million. My expectation and my vision, because we're such a vital service that's essential and delivers government services in an efficient, effective way, over time I would hope and expect that our state funding would increase as a percentage of our total.
Why is a resource like 211 important now?
Well, we've seen the deterioration of the middle class, the classes below, in terms of social strata. There's a weakening safety net in America today. For many of those people, they don't know how to gain access. They need help in navigation. There's proven research that when you're in dire need or in dire circumstances, actually your ability to think clearly and to focus on a broader range of things gets narrowed tremendously. So getting somebody else on the telephone who can help you work through that is critically important. So just generally this deterioration of the safety net and the ability to access services. A couple years ago when we went through the fiasco and the meltdown of the mortgage market, we did some work, and we were helping people who were going to be losing their home better understand what resources were there for them. And that most oftentimes was a middle-class person, and they had no understanding to how to navigate the system. The way that I look at our organization and our services is we make social services work better for everybody, and as a result, make community stronger. And I can't imagine for any citizen in America that they would be against those two endeavors.
What does this work mean to you personally, Dan?
It's a beautiful, in my mind, beautiful commingling of trying to be an efficient operator, to run alongside government and deliver just a range of programs that are out there in a more efficient, effective way. So that's kind of the business side of my mind. On the emotional and more personal side, it's a way to really make a difference. I know that's an oft-used phrase, but we are touching, you know, over 400,000 Oregonians and people in Southwest Washington per year to improve their lives and to make problems have solutions. And that feels really good, and the people I work alongside are very committed and very passionate about that work. And it makes, although the work is challenging and at times difficult, it really makes for a pleasant experience when you put those two sides together.
I know we're coming up on the holidays, and I know sometimes the holidays can be tough for people. Do you see a spike in callership during the holiday season?
Most definitely we do, Peter, and it really starts about this time of year, or little bit prior when we do our winter shelter work relative to the cold weather. But specific to Christmas and the holidays, I mean, a lot of it centers around the kids, wanting to provide kids and families, parents calling that need resources for kids. It could be clothing. It's absolutely around toys and gifts. Another area we see is in, I need to make sure that we have adequate food around the holidays for a holiday meal. And so this will be my first holiday period, if you will, at 211 Info, but you can already see a spike in call volume. We also get some people calling to say, where can I volunteer this holiday time and Christmas time? So we do get those callers as well. But most of our calls around that are pertaining to Christmas and the holidays are really around parents' concern for providing for an adequate Christmas time, holiday time for children. And again, as I said, it could be gifting, it could be celebration, it could be food, but we absolutely do get an increase in calls.
That does it for this evening of Prison Pipeline. We've been speaking with Dan Herman, CEO of 211 Info. Find information on this and past Prison Pipeline episodes at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. If you like us on Facebook. Tune in next week to hear Shakespeare's King Lear performed by prisoners at Twin Rivers Correctional Institute. This is Peter Pincel saying happy holidays and good night.
Standing on. Sometimes you see that I'm mad. Don't you know no one alive can always be left up when everything goes wrong? You see so bad.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor a New Year's Eve Afrobeat and Salsa dance party with live performances from Palante and Jujuba in a benefit for Mercy Corps at the Red Rose Ballroom on Northeast Alberta and 19th on New Year's Eve, Tuesday, December 31st from 9 p.m. till 1 a.m. and a salsa lesson at 8:30. Musical Worlds, converge when Nigerian Afrobeat band Jujuba and Afro-Cuban salsa and Latin band Palante bring the community out for this high-energy dance party to support the international relief work of Mercy Corps. The New Year's Eve celebration is at the Red Rose Ballroom on Northeast Alberta and 19th. For details, please go to kboo.fm and click on the New Year's Eve dance party link on the lower right side of the page.
2013, the year of the whistleblower. U.S. spy apparatus was exposed for all to see. Join me, Linda Olsen Osterlund, on a deeper look Thursday, December 26th. My guest is Carl Massinio of the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, the man responsible for the face of Edward Snowden appearing on buses throughout Washington, D.C. It's the Thank You, Edward Snowden campaign. We'll take a look back at 2013, the year of the whistleblower. That's Thursday, December 26th at 9:30 a.m. right here on KBOO.
It is 7:01 p.m. Monday, December 23rd, 2013. Coming up next on KBOO Portland, it's Hard Knock Radio, so stay tuned.
Bonjour, c'est les Nubians. Vous écoutez Hard Knock Radio, la meilleure radio de la Bay Area.
Ladies and gentlemen, back up off the dial. Hard Knock Radio is in the house. This is Rock Steady Crew President Crazy Legs. Yo, drop it.
Yo, this is Kev Choice. You are listening to Hard Knock Radio with that hard knock, them hard news, the hard views, and that hard music. So check us out.
Can I be the one to bring you joy? What's up, y'all? This is Letty C, and I'm here at my favorite station at Hard Knock Radio, baby.
What's up, y'all? This is Lyrics Born, and when I'm not calling out to all area crew, I'm listening to Hard Knock Radio. Oh!
It's all love.